So I'd like to introduce our speaker, Brian Mason, who is the leader of the New Democratic Opposition Party in the Alberta Caucus. He's going to talk about a lot of the things that are on our minds since we have had a change in the throne, at least in our government. There are a lot of issues that I think a growing number of Albertans are concerned about. So I'm not going to go, you had the flyer, I'm not going to go into a lot of detail about his background, but he's had a good political experience, beginning with the Alberta Federation of Students, plus involved with unions when he was a bus driver, plus he's been an MLA, city councillor, for 11 years. So I think he is a savvy person and a nice person and you're going to enjoy having Brian. Would you join me in welcoming?
I will not tap the microphone. I will move it a little bit. And I'd like to begin by thanking Sylvia very much for that very kind introduction. The first time I ever came to Lethbridge, I stayed at Sylvia and Gordon's house. I was in student politics in those days, and we were launching a campaign against the higher fees that were being levied on students from out of the country. And so I was brought in as a speaker in order to further the campaign, and I enjoyed the hospitality of Gordon and Sylvia at that time. And I've got to know a number of people through not just student politics, but municipal politics as well, over the years, and I think I see John Boris there. You did, and yeah, you probably did. So, and Ruth Elzinga I knew as well, and she's here. So it's good to see old friends and make some new ones. And I'd certainly like to thank the Southern Alberta Council on Public Affairs for inviting me today to talk a little bit about the future of our province, at least from the perspective of the Alberta New Democrats. And I want to start a little bit about talk about the trip down here, because we came down, of course, and it was quite windy right from the get-go leaving in Edmonton. It was actually windy in Edmonton, not just here. And so we were driving down, and our friend Mark Sandilands had told us that a Chinook was expected, and we should be very careful on the road. And we left Edmonton, and I have a little thermometer display up above the windshield in my car, so we're following the temperature. We left Edmonton, it was 17 below zero. And we carried on through Calgary, and it was about 16, and we were driving down. We got just almost to Fort McLeod, and it was still minus 15 at that time. And Anand is with my staff, and he and I were talking about what was wrong with Mark Sandilands, and he's told us that there was going to be a Chinook. And it's still 15 below zero. We're almost at Fort McLeod. And just almost after we had said that, all the windows on the car frosted up just very suddenly. Even the side mirrors and so on, and we just had a little bit of a space where the defrost had been on that we could actually see the road, and there was a truck beside us, and he hit the brakes because the same thing happened to him. And I'm looking at the thermometer, the display on the outside temperature in my car, and watching it climb from minus 15. In less than 5 minutes, it went to minus 2. And so I said, well, that is the Chinook that Mark was talking about. We just hit it. And the reason I mention that is because I think that Chinook is very representative as to how political change happens in this province. Very suddenly. And perhaps when you least expect it, or when you've given up on it altogether. So I just want to start with that very hopeful note, because even though it's windier here, it's certainly a lot warmer and much nicer. So let's hope for a Chinook in Alberta politics. Alberta right now is at a crossroads, and I think a very significant crossroads. And why do we say that? You know, at one point we would have talked about Alberta being a crossroads because they paid off the debt, and that gives us wonderful new opportunities. I think that was a fairly common view a couple of years ago, but I'll explain why I don't think that that's a realistic view in as I go along. I think there's three main reasons why Alberta's at a crossroad. The first one is that there's been a dramatic increase in economic activity in this province, a quantum leap, if you will, in the kind of activity that's taking place in our economy. And this is due to a sustained increase in world oil prices, and also because of a reassessment by the United States of its strategic interests. Since the year 2000, Canada's proven oil reserves have been readjusted upwards from 5 billion barrels to 180 billion barrels, and we are now ranked number 2 in the world in terms of proven oil reserves because of the tar sands, which I call it the tar sands, not the oil sands. It's a bit of a sanitized thing, but it's a mucky, dirty place, and I don't think we should let them change the language on us. I think we should call it the tar sands. But we're now the number 2 ranked in the world. The second reason is that there's a growing awareness among Albertans and Canadians of the urgency of dealing with climate change. Recently, the Intergovernment Panel on Climate Change released its report, and it had all political parties, all governments, running for cover because it's becoming clear that this is an urgent issue that demands urgent, decisive, and immediate attention. And the people of this province get that, just as people in the rest of Canada also get that. And the third reason why I think we're at a crossroads is that we're in an emerging growth crisis, a crisis of growth. And it's caused by a couple of things. First of all, the government has failed to plan the public sector in order to accommodate the growth. And Mr. Klein said on his way out of the legislature, and I was there in the media room in the basement of the legislative building when he said that the opposition got one thing right. We had no plan. And by that, and only a premier on his way out the door would say, only Ralph Klein would say that. Nobody else would admit it. But the other thing that they absolutely refused to do any economic planning at all. And Mr. Stelmach, at his first news conference, which I also attended, said that the government will not touch the brake on the economy. So those are three reasons why I think it's time to have a look at where we're going as a province and reassess some of the decisions we've made, the directions we want to go, and even reassess some of our political allegiance. I think there are five main questions that need to be addressed at this crossroads. We need to ask ourselves some very probing and difficult but meaningful questions. And the first question that I would ask is, are we prepared to face our debt squarely and honestly or not? Now, we all know that Mr. Klein's claim to fame was that he paid off Alberta's $23 billion debt in 10 or 11 years. And that was certainly the impression we all were under. But one of the things that was done in order to pay off the debt was that there was a lack of investment in new infrastructure and in the repair and maintenance of existing infrastructure in our province. And that has emerged as a new debt, a new financial debt. The provincial government has admitted in its financial planning that there needs to be $3.2 billion invested in schools in this province over the next 5 years. Some education groups have placed that at closer to $5 billion as what's absolutely necessary. Edmonton and Calgary combined have identified $2.7 billion in debt, and other municipalities and some of the fastest growing municipalities are Fort McMurray and Grand Prairie, have very, very significant deaths as well, as do rural areas and other cities and towns throughout the province. I was unable to find a definitive figure for the amount of debt that is owed for infrastructure with respect to our healthcare system, but I imagine it's very significant. The AEUB has estimated the debt or the liability for cleaning up environmental damage caused by exploration for conventional oil and gas in this province is about $4 billion. We don't have a figure for that liability with respect to the tar sands. But I would estimate that our debt in terms of infrastructure is at least $10 billion and perhaps twice that. And that is a debt that we have as Albertans to pay. Now, there is a rising chorus among the new government for P3s, public-private partnerships. The government has experimented with them a little bit under Mr. Klein's administration, the Calgary Courthouse. They were going to build a Calgary hospital that way. The courthouse project ended when they had cost overruns of 67%. Edmonton Ring Road is held out as one of the major success stories, but we were able to show that they could have saved $41 million if they had have used traditional public financing. The main reason that they saved money on it is that they did it sooner rather than later, and so the dramatic increases in costs have not affected that project. It's not because of the P3s. We see a rising chorus of cabinet ministers talking about P3s as the answer. Mr. Stelmach is talking about it for Highway 63 to Fort McMurray. Mr. Davis, the head of the Calgary Health Region, is talking about using it to deal with the huge cost overruns with their project, their South Calgary Hospital down there. And Mr. Liepert is talking about it in respect to schools. In today's Calgary Herald, Mr. Liepert said this: we simply cannot, as a government, meet the infrastructure needs in schools, post-secondary, health, and roads without looking at a different way of funding them, he said. There is no surplus, and I'm not prepared to go into debt for school infrastructure, and I'm not prepared to raise taxes. So what then is a P3, and how do you magically get out of the conundrum of investing without borrowing money or raising taxes? Well, quite simply, P3s are a way in which public money can be transferred to the corporate supporters of the Conservative government, and it is a way in which they can hide the debt, because it moves the debt off the capital books of the province, and it becomes a debt which is every bit as real, but it doesn't appear on the government books because it's debt of private companies. But you have to pay through lease agreements and so on to get everything back. Now, the private companies have to borrow money, just like the government, usually at a higher rate. Every cost that they incur plus a profit is passed on to the taxpayer. So there's no magic solution. So what they've tried to do here is create a shell game. They had a financial debt. They transferred it into an infrastructure debt. Now they are attempting to transfer it into a P3 debt. And what we are saying is we need to be honest and straightforward with Albertans. We need to have a plan which involves a full accounting of all of the debt that is owed in infrastructure and otherwise in this province. Second, a clear plan to address the infrastructure needs of the province. And thirdly, a clear and honest plan about how that's going to be paid, through a combination, in our view, of pay-as-you-go and borrowing by government in order to pay for capital debt. I want to be clear that we do not support borrowing for the operations of the government. But all municipal governments and provincial governments across Canada traditionally finance infrastructure through borrowing, and it is a sensible and reasonable approach if it was taken in combination with a clear repayment plan. The second question that I think we should be asking is, who should be the primary beneficiary of tar sands development? The people of Alberta or the energy corporations and the United States? We are seeing in this province what I term a gold rush style of development. The impacts are all around us. Small business can't find people. The public sector is short of people. There's dramatic increases in the costs of construction. The emissions are going through the roof, and I just want to deal with that a little bit in Alberta because it's been a topical issue recently. Emissions in Alberta have risen 39.4% above 1990 levels as of 2004. Oil and gas emissions have increased by 50% in the same time. The tar sands will account for approximately 50% of emissions, greenhouse gas emissions growth between 2003 and 2010, and that's according to the Pembina Institute. The government is using what they call intensity targets, which are dishonest and misleading because they take the total number of tons of CO2 emissions and they divide it by the increase in the gross domestic product of the province. And so if emissions grow 40% and the economy grows 60%, according to that formula, we have dropped our intensity of emissions quite dramatically. And that's what the government is saying. It's a sleight of hand. It has no meaning in terms of any change, any climate change or effect on the environment. And in fact, they haven't even followed their own plan. The AEUB-approved Voyageurs project, it was a Suncor project, despite the fact that it was clear that it would increase both the absolute and intensity of greenhouse gas emissions. The Stelmach government, in terms of climate change, is where the Harper government was a year ago. In other words, they're in a state of denial. He has said, and we have said that we need to slow down the economy. Mr. Stelmach has said we won't touch the brake. And this is despite the fact that Radio Canada was able to get minutes of a meeting that took place in Houston in January of 2006, put on by Energy Canada and the U.S. Energy Department, and involving lots of people from the energy industry in both countries. And they called for a five-fold increase in production out of Alberta's tar sands. So if Mr. Stelmach won't touch the brake, and the energy companies in the United States have their feet firmly on the accelerator, then the kinds of problems we've been seeing in this province can only reach entirely unmanageable proportions. We've proposed a moratorium. We believe that we need to catch up. We need to catch up in terms of our staffing, our nurses, our healthcare, our schools, our infrastructure construction. We need to assess and take a close look at all of the impacts on the environment and job force and so on. In other words, we need to take a breather and make a plan. And I just wanted to read from an article, Alberta's Outlook on Sustainable. Professors at University of Calgary energy economist Robert Mansell has concluded that strong action will be required to deal with the problems that could derail long-term prosperity, particularly labor shortages, rising costs, water scarcity, greenhouse gas emissions, and others. Without a strong and sustained commitment to meet these challenges, Alberta's prospects will dim, he said. And many people, including former Premier Lougheed, have indicated that we need to take a slower approach to tar sands development. This has been rejected, unfortunately, by the government. We need to have a royalty review, something we campaigned on in the last election, and that apparently will be announced sometime today by Dr. Oberg. The greatest concern we have is that all of the information used in setting the royalties needs to be made available to the people. The process needs to be transparent. There is an export of jobs. A labor management agreement with Ottawa means that companies can bring in workers from other countries, and yet they bypass the established building trades unions in this province. There are thousands of those workers. They are employed, but they're not employed in their trade because they are not hired, nor do they need to be hired by these companies onto our sands projects before they go to other countries to bring in workers. They're now talking about bringing in major new industrial facilities fabricated in China. That's the Northern Lights project. They are expanding exports of unprocessed bitumen. I don't know if people can see it here. I have a graph which it talks about the prices that can be obtained or estimated in 2010 for various types of materials. And if at the top you see things like styrene and ethylene, and at the bottom, the very bottom graph, is bitumen. So you can see clearly the prices that you get for the products, and the price that you get for bitumen is far and away the lowest of all. Synthetic crude oil brings 2.5 times the price as unprocessed bitumen. And yet there are a number of pipeline proposals to expand the export of unprocessed bitumen to the United States that are currently up for approval. So if we have an energy policy in this province, in which foreign workers and foreign industrial production is used to develop and extract our tar sands, and we get 1% on most of the projects, and we export much of the product in an unrefined form, then whose interest is Alberta's current energy policy in? Certainly not in the interests of the people of this province. And we need to have a made-in-Alberta energy policy and an economic development plan which is based on putting the needs of Albertans and Canadians first and developing healthy export markets for processed bitumen and other hydrocarbon products second. The third question that I would ask is, how do we ensure that Albertans get the social programs which they deserve? Well, I'm quite pleased with the role that our party played in conjunction with Friends of Medicare and many others in defeating the third way. But we need to continue to innovate in our healthcare system. Innovation is the key. The wait times registry that Alberta Health has established has produced dramatic results in reducing wait times, and we need to extend that. Another proposal that the Alberta New Democrats have talked about is a pharmaceutical savings agency in which all the drugs for the healthcare system would be bought in bulk, and we would negotiate with drug companies for bulk prices. We estimate that that could save our healthcare system $50 million in the first year, and yet the government has rejected this approach. And finally, we need to talk about implementing prevention and making sure that the social determinants of health, which the government gives lip service to, are actually taken into account. In other words, dealing with poverty and bad housing has significant results in terms of reducing people's need to access expensive healthcare services, and that needs to be hammered home all the time. There's many other questions which I don't have time to deal with. Seniors care is a very important one, and one in which the government had promised to implement the recommendations of the Auditor General for inspections and higher standards and better staffing ratios and so on, and has abjectly failed to do so. So taking care of our seniors is very important. Jimmy Carter said, "The measure of a society is found in how they treat their weakest, most helpless citizens. And by that measure, Alberta has been found wanting. We need to invest in people. There's no easy answers, but clearly the nursing shortage and shortage of other healthcare professionals needs to be addressed through our educational system. We need to invest in those things. Even if we build new hospitals, new clinics, new schools, it's more difficult to make sure that trained professional people